You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Welcome to Trending. I am dying here. For anyone who doesn't usually join us on Facebook or YouTube Live, now that we have our music again leading in, they can't hear us. And so I've got like a bunch of comments. Get it together. Awkward. Chris, get off your phone. Where you guys were sitting here. He's probably texting Bishop.
I was texting a bishop. Thank you very much.
I'm giving him a hard time. You're listening to Trending. Oh my gosh. Talk about flack. We just got it for having 30 seconds of silence leading into the show on the live feed. Join us there if you haven't before, but in the meantime, you two, they're getting hammered on social media right now.
And I think they should be getting hammered on social media. In case you didn't know this, Ireland is going through a major national debate over the right to life.
They did so about 20 years ago, and I have to put a shout out to Ireland. They, Youth Defense, is an organization that started with seven young people who spoke up and said, hey, 20 years ago, you guys want to legalize abortion? Ireland's pro-life. And so seven young people gathered to the streets, started a rally cry, and made it so that abortion was not legalized in Ireland, and they have remained a pro-life area to the point, you guys, get this, wake up call to all of us. Even when abortion wasn't legal, Chris, you know what they did? They would still go to places that would refer out to abortions to leave the country, and they would sidewalk counsel.
That's beautiful.
And abortion couldn't even be done in those buildings. And I have to tell you, I went to a small Catholic university, and I had professors and students say, well, they only do RU486 chemical abortions there. We're not going to go and pray in front of the abortion clinic. Oh my gosh, I was pulling my hair out, literally sometimes trying to drag people's butts to pray in front of Planned Parenthood. That's right, I said butts on air. So he looked quickly at me.
The campaign is Save the Eighth, and I believe this refers to the Eighth Amendment in Ireland's constitution. And I am not a scholar of Irish government, but what they're saying is Save the Eighth. Save this. This is integral to who we are as the Irish people, that we defend life from conception to death. Like, that's who we are. And U2 comes out, and they come out with a video then for the Repeal the Eighth movement.
And they're saying, hey, don't forget to get out and vote. And while I think at first the tweet started with don't forget to vote, it made it clear they were championing the logo of the pro-abortion movement that radically is fighting for not the rights of women, but the rights to kill women and silence women in the womb.
You know, it's so disappointing because YouTube has been such a strong supporter of human rights around the world. I mean, and they've always had a very vocal position. This is not a band who is pop without any voice. They've always had a voice for the rights of immigrants, for the rights of refugees, for, you know, people in dire need in Africa during, you know, times of famine. And here we have them coming out, really for the greatest human rights atrocity imaginable, the atrocity of the killing of the unborn in the womb. It's such a contradiction for everything that they've stood up for publicly prior to this.
I'm just going to throw this out here. Bono, man, you were Catholic. You left the church. When you don't have the consistency of the Catholic faith, the consistency of moral ethic, guess what? He's all of a sudden okay with abortion, and he's willing to champion that for women. I'm just disgusted. Any man who's speaking out for abortion, I just have no respect for you. I'm sorry. It is just, in many ways, I just want to say either you're pandering to a group of people who are shouting very loudly at you, or you really just don't want to deal with the consequences with your promiscuous lifestyle.
Well, it's a misguided sense of personal freedom, right? Again, it's that personal freedom that says my personal freedom outweighs everyone else's freedoms, to the point of saying that my prerogative outweighs someone else's freedom to life. That the consequences of my lifestyle don't have action, even if that amounts to murdering of my children. Like, and there's no way to justify this. You know, and people will say, like, well, it's her body. You know, you can't make a person. It's her body. again, you go back to that. Well, nobody made them. They made choices. Choices came up to this position. And the pro-abort people will always make those fringe arguments of, well, what about cases of incest or rape? Which is what, like 1% or lower?
Okay, less than 1% of abortions that are performed have to do with incest, rape, or health of the mother. Less than 1% are within that grouping.
And I don't think most people even know that, because the rhetoric is so much like, well, what about this? What about that? And you go fringe. The majority, the massive majority, over 99% of the abortions performed in this country are for convenience. That's what it is. It's mm-hmm. we're killing children for the convenience of people. We're literally murdering so that we can just go on with our lifestyles.
And we're forgetting, you guys, that 1%, a lot of them are consisting of abortion and incest. And in those cases, we're also talking about minors who are being brought in by individuals trying to destroy the innocence, basically destroy not only the innocence of that child, the innocence of the child who is now pregnant, but also any evidence of what has happened. We're talking about people who have been victimized, and now we're victimizing them yet again. Man, like, I look at this, and you too, there's a reason that people are saying, I'm not following you anymore. I'm no longer listening to your music. It's just heartbreaking, especially coming from some people who claim to be Christian. I think we should have higher expectations of ourselves, and maybe they should be doing more to speak out about how we can help women in crisis pregnancy. Maybe they could have just not taken a stand on this one, even if they had a personal thought, right?
Yeah. For you two who stood out so strongly for human rights, the greatest gift to human traffickers and pimps is abortion.
Drop the mic. That's just very clear. There's no question about it. You can look at any undercover sting operation having to do with Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood has aided and abetted the sexual trafficking, sexual rings. They're encouraging teenagers in role play, sexual role play, encouraging books. I mean, you guys, it's just gross. And you see that U2 claims to fight this when they're just feeding into this lifestyle. However, there's great news on the horizon here in the United States. We could use a lot of examples from Ireland and how they've stood up and gone to the streets speaking out. Pray for them. May 25th is that vote. You guys, go to adoration this week. So that's your homework. Go to adoration, be before our Lord. And please, I'm going to ask you to offer that hour for women who are facing crisis pregnancy and for the country of Ireland, that they remain pro-life and that lives are saved as a result. But in the meantime, Chris, this week, Iowa has passed the heartbeat law, which is banning abortion in the state of Iowa once a heartbeat is detected.
If you stop a heartbeat and that takes a life, I mean, you know, I mean, does that make sense? We declare someone who is living dead when the heartbeat stops. Then why don't we declare someone living when their heartbeat starts? Right? I mean, like if you're dead when your heart stops, why aren't you alive when your heart stops? Darts. Like, I mean, doesn't that, it just seems to make sense. And I think this is just a common sense law. I always saying, well, from the time the heartbeat begins, we have a new human life that we can say that. And again, as Catholics, we believe it starts at conception, but they're legislating saying, we know specifically, we can say here, there's a heartbeat here. Let's defend this. Let's agree here. And I know I've heard advocates, some pro-life advocates saying, it doesn't go far enough. It doesn't go far enough. And I'll agree with you that. But how much better is this than where we were? I mean, how great is it now that we've defended human life at this point? We can continue to move the line. Let's continue to move the line. But for Iowa to stand up and say, we're going to start here and say no more, I think it's a great, great place to start.
I just think, thank God, you know, now if you are a child in the womb, the safest place for you in the United States is not only to be in your mother's womb, which used to be the safest place for a child, but now it's also Iowa, literally being in the physical state where that child is not at risk of the influence of others saying, you can just abort your baby. 21 days, we know by 21 days that baby's heartbeat is detected. However, you know, studies have shown that there are times where they actually can detect the heartbeat earlier. For example, University of Oxford has been able to detect the heartbeat as early as 16 days. And I have also seen instances where they've been able to detect it at about 10 days as well. So you look at this, and if they can detect that heartbeat, you guys, at least by 21 days, most women don't even know they're pregnant.
Right. Again, I think we're so ignorant about the development of human life, too. We don't, I don't think most people grasp how quickly that little body forms, right? How quickly you see fingers and toes and all of those things. I don't think most people know this is a unique human being with its own specific DNA, that it's, that this is a separate life. This is not an organ of the mother. This is a unique human being that is growing and should be protected.
Well, and you can see at that 8-week mark, for example, the nervous system has already developed. That bony structure is already present. You can really look through it. And while the baby in many ways is somewhat opaque, like you can see through and look at all the bony structure, you see just like a baby today in its earliest and smallest, most fragile form. Just like after a baby comes out of the womb, the baby's bones are very soft. You know how when the baby's heads are kind of like funky shaped because the bones are so soft, they've got to come through that birth canal.
I was putting a shirt on my my 4-month-old the other day, and I was like, oh my gosh, I touched the spot. Ah, it's like that because he's got the little soft spot on his head. And I was like, ah, my wife's like, you didn't press too hard. I'm like, I don't think I pressed too hard. And his leg was switching. No, that didn't happen. But no, it is.
Child abuse.
Even 4 months out of the womb, the skull is still forming.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. And you see that development of that baby. And you guys, the science and the I've seen human life develop in the womb. The greatest injustice to the unborn is that we can't see. We have technology today that allows us to step into that womb with 3D and 4D ultrasounds, which are incredible and have truly changed lives. 70% of women who are in a crisis pregnancy considering an abortion do change their minds about having an abortion in that moment. And so having this heartbeat law where the mom can now be delayed, she can hear her baby's heartbeat, see those images, praise God for the opportunity to save lives. And I ask you, would lobbying to save one life matter? Would it make a difference? It would. And we should be fighting in front of those abortion clinics, making an effort to pause and pray. You're listening to Trending. We'll be right back. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C. Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
This past week, CNN put out a post about patriarchy and how it is to blame. Grant, it's getting into the gun debate, which we're not going to take up here in Trending. You can listen to other areas. You can read some of what the church has to say about that. But that being said, what they refer to and what they blame for gun violence is patriarchy, saying things such as patriarchy kills people, toxic masculinity is so incredibly harmful, and, you know, it's harmful when you tell boys that they can't cry.
I hate this conversation because so often what they're saying is toxic masculinity isn't. It's the result of a lack of role modeling what masculinity is, you know? And to say that young men end up in prisons because of toxic masculinity, no, young men end up in prisons because they don't have good role models. Like, there's a story in CNN, and the first line says this guy is in jail because he murdered somebody because he called him a derogatory term for a female dog or wolf, right? I'm not going to say it, obviously. Well, if he had a father, and maybe he did, but most of the time, like, your dad teaches you, if someone calls you a name, you don't shoot them. I mean, a masculinity teaches you the proper exercise of power. It doesn't teach you murder.
Here's the deal, you guys. I'm very serious when I say this. We have seen some major shootings take place over the last couple of years, some of which being at schools. And we have seen that in those cases, those young men have not had fathers in their homes. They have been, and there are a number of other circumstances that we could refer to, but why is it that CNN is sitting here pointing to patriarchy as a problem when in fact these boys haven't had their fathers around? And not only that, why would you point to marriages being intact and blaming that rather than pointing to the fact that there's a lot of broken marriages, increase in ADD, increase in lower grades, more likely to drop out of high school, less likely to go to college? I could go on and on. You guys, why are we seeing that CNN is just putting their foot in their mouths here and trying to tell this sad sob story about how this man, you know, like you said, Chris, was in prison, and at 19, he robbed a store for rent, how he was too embarrassed to take help from his girlfriend because real men don't ask for help. No, real men know when they're struggling and when they need to do more. Real men know how to have self-control. Real men are taught responsibility, integrity of character, and so much more from their fathers when men are in the home and being true patriarchs.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you wanted to do an intervention into young men's lives, well, what is, you know, we know that the majority of young men incarcerated come from fatherless homes. We know that. So it just seems like if we wanted to intervene in those lives, injecting fatherhood, injecting masculine role models into their lives would be something that would help to keep them out of prison, you know. And to argue that it's the patriarchy that put them in, well, again, it was absenteeism that put them in.
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington. You are listening to Trending. You know, if you are catching the show, we actually have two shows a week that we do, and your network might only be airing one of them. One of the things we talked about earlier in the week is how Boy Scouts of America are now the Scouts of America. One thing I was going to say, and I really see how it ties into this whole idea of men being in the home. You know, Chris, you mentioned last show how basically more women are helping to lead some of the Boy Scouts troops. Or sorry, Scouts. I'm a sexist apparently for saying boys still. Sorry. But basically what I was thinking about is we need more fathers to stop depending on a group like Boy Scouts in order to take your kids camping. And, I mean, boys and girls can come to go camping. Teach them how to make a fire. I am always surprised. I go camping with a bunch of young adults every winter. And, dude, none of the guys know how to start a fire. And I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but I'm like, this is basic survivor skills. Come on.
Right.
But it's because we're not making that effort as family members to go out and do these things, both for fun, but to learn some survivor skills. And to recognize there are times where you might suffer and might face suffering.
I think we have to acknowledge that in our modern American affluence, we've outsourced parenting.
Mm.
Right? I mean, and again, and we look at what's changed. And again, that idea of the nuclear family where dad goes to work and mom stays home and they have the little house in the suburbs, that's a relatively new concept in and of itself. But we do have to ask the question, who's raising the kids, right? Mm. And if mom works or dad works or mom and dad both work, they commute, kids go to school, then they go to daycare, then they go to sports. Like, where is the time to hand on our beliefs? Where's the time to role model, you know, how we live in life? And we've just given that away so much. And so, you know, we have these things like the rise of mass shootings, right?
Yeah.
This is a relatively new phenomenon where young people are doing this kind of stuff. Well, okay, well, let's go back and let's see where are the commonalities? Fatherless homes, commonality, right? So, okay, what's the intervention? Well, I guess the intervention would be maybe let's encourage family. Let's encourage, less, you know, time, in organized activities and more time out with family. Let's encourage this. Let's subsidize this. And as a government, if we're going to do something to stabilize communities, then let's give some sort of encouragement for families to stay stable rather than the opposite, where oftentimes you can get more care, you can get more government assistance if you're not in a two-parent home. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're doing the exact opposite. And then we're blaming dads when we de-incentivize staying and being part of that community. Like, it's a ridiculous premise that CNN is operating on here.
And you know, Chris, I've been thinking about this the past week. When I was at Mass a week or two ago, a father was talking about how they're developing all the buildings around the church. And this is a church that has just doubled or tripled. I think it's tripled in size over the last 10 years since this congregation, SSP, has taken over. And it's been really interesting because one of the things he was talking about is he was quoting a philosopher who died about 30 years ago. I can't remember the name. It was someone I hadn't heard of, but he was talking about in Catholic philosophical idea was it used to be that you could send your kids out onto the street to play and they would learn their Catholic faith interacting with the other kids on the street because the kids were Christian, they were Catholic, right? And they were going to hopefully practice Christian virtues, right, and how they interacted or fail and were to come back and say, hey, I actually misbehaved. I'm sorry. Think about that reconciliation of going back and apologizing for how you behaved as a little child. That's something that would take place. Well, today we can't send our kids into the streets to learn their faith. And I was thinking about how grateful I personally am to have grown up with siblings, right, who I did learn my Catholic faith from. And after that, I chose to go to a Catholic university. And even though all of us have our faults and we make mistakes at times in university, at the same time, I still learned my Catholic faith from the other men and women at a good Catholic university who I interacted with day in and day out, who ran to that reconciliation room when they've made mistakes, who at times would come up to you and apologize when they did or said something. Like, we made mistakes and we grew, and having that atmosphere and interaction is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you mentioned family, too, because where do we learn to compromise first? It's in family. Where do we learn that our needs don't outweigh the needs of everyone else? It's in family.
Yeah.
Where do we learn that people will love us unconditionally? It's in family, right? And so when we take away that from kids, and again, if you're in a single parent situation, I'm not trying to knock you. You do the best you can, but you've got to compensate for somebody not being there, right?
And
someone's
missing.
We're going
to talk about that a little later in the show. There was a question that came out to Jordan Peterson, psychologist, of can people with same-sex attraction, two men or say two women, raise children? And he talks about there's something that you have to compensate for, whether you're two men trying to raise a daughter or you are a single mom trying to raise a son. There's something missing that you have to work on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but so again, back to this article from CNN, like this toxic masculinity. I'm going to say this, it's not the patriarchy. It's masculinity without patriarchy that gets toxic. It's when you've got young men joining street gangs and status oriented situations where there's no father and they're doing what young men do. They're vying for position, but there's no father to show them the value of sacrifice. There's no father to show them the control of strength. There's no father to show them how you restrain yourself. When you're angry, you walk away, right? Is every family healthy? Is every man healthy? No, but we need more healthy men to make manhood healthier.
You know, this week we have also news of Facebook, actually. Facebook is now talking about being a matchmaker. And I look at this whole conversation as we're talking about masculinity, as we're talking about having good friends and environments. And we've gotten to the point where dating's increasingly taking place online because we don't have that good faith-based interaction. You know, people are turning to Catholic Match. People are turning to Tinder. People are turning to all these different applications just to meet someone else. And I look, Facebook is gathering all this data, right? They're getting in trouble as well for it. But now they're going, oh crap, Match Group tanks along with Tinder, OkCupid, Match.com. They're the ones who owned all of these. They tanked when Facebook made this announcement. And we've gotten to the point where Facebook knows more about us because we're willing to post it online than the people we interact with daily.
Yeah, it's a very, why is online dating so appealing? One, the pool is larger. Two, you can reject someone right out without the awkwardness of having to reject someone, right? You never ask them. And you can put your best face forward. I also think, yeah, we are becoming more and more isolated. So yeah, when Facebook gets in the pool, they're the biggest fish in the ocean right now.
Right. You know, I think that it's a real inspiration that while Mark Zuckerberg's sitting here saying, we want to create real long-term relationships. You guys start with your relationships now. If you want to meet someone, make the effort to invest in your friendships. Invest in being a better person. Focus on good virtues. Focus on being someone who is marriageable, who has responsibility over your finances. There are so many things that we can do today to be better individuals. And like attracts like. Be the person you would like to attract.
Absolutely. And, you know, take a risk in IRL. I mean, you know, take a risk in real life.
We'll be right back on Trending. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmeri Millington. We're going to be talking about some feminist responses to some real feminist facts.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmeri, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So we're talking about Facebook getting into dating and how that just kind of tanked a lot of other dating sites. It feels like, and you're listening to Trending, by the way, my name is Chris Mueller. I'm here with Timmeri. It feels like Facebook getting into dating is just kind of saying, hey, people are obviously been using this to kind of Facebook stalk people for a long time. So why don't we just get it and make it official?
You know, I look at it and making that official, it helps, I could see in some ways, but at the same time, we have this longing, right? This longing for permanence, this longing for deeper relationships, this longing to be loved. And are we maybe putting too much of a focus on that now through social media when we already waste so much of our time? You know I personally don't spend a ton of time on social media because you end up in the comparing game. You end up in feeling like you're not enough. Or even if you're excited about the other projects people are working on, maybe it's overly pressure, like, oh man, I need to do more. But is that going to put more pressure for relationships again?
Right. And we're finding that people are marrying later and later and later and later and later. I think part of that is because we don't have the communities around us anymore, so we're not meeting people the way we used to. I mean, I remember growing up at the same parish my whole life, and you'd look across the church and you'd see a little girl, and your parents knew each other. My brother met his wife that way.
Mm.
He literally saw her across the church one day, and he said, "I'm going to ask that girl out." And I said, "No, you're not." And it went on for like 6 months. He'd say that. And then, I think we were home for the summer, and he would keep going back hoping that she was going to be there, and she wasn't there because she'd gone away to college. And then, so the next summer, he was at mass with my mom and dad, and he looked across, he saw her, and he said, I'm going to go ask that girl out. I said, "No, you're not." But he did. Mm-hmm. And they got married, you know?
You know, I'm thinking of one of my clients. I teach Pilates for those who are maybe just tuning in, so I work a lot with spine health, hip health, et cetera, doing like rehabilitation. And one of my clients, who's a little older, he's been married for over 56 years and has been with his wife since they were about 12 years old. And I look back, and it's always interesting. I spend a lot of time working with this individual, and he doesn't talk a ton about his marriage, but when he does, I've never heard a bad word uttered. I've only ever seen probably the most he's shown is when he was concerned for her health. Or I've heard, you know, simple little communications about how they work on, you know, picking a new home, right? And you see this. And what I look at is this example of fidelity over these years. The fact that that's a really long time to be together, but they didn't take for granted the fact that they loved each other when they were young, very, very young, right? And they worked through growing together. And I think today we live in a time, well, he's not exactly what I want, so I'm going to move past it. Now, there are certain qualities that we should absolutely say, hey, I'm not okay with that. But there's also a lot where we have to say, you know, I'm willing to work through this and grow together.
Right. We're not saying compromise and settle. But we are saying if you meet somebody who's perfect, but he's, you know, but he likes Star Wars, or he doesn't pick his, you know, he's a slob. You know what I mean? Like, then you go, okay, well, you know, maybe I need to relax a little bit. You know, there's things we can overlook, but we're not saying, well, he's such a perfect guy, but he likes to date other women too. You know, that's not the settle we want you to make, right? We'd avoid that.
Well, have you had the define the relationship talk yet? I mean, because if you haven't had that define the relationship talk and you are dating multiple people early on, that's okay, but you need to be clear that, hey, we're just dating. We're not committed yet.
Are we going back to the dating project? Is that
a dating project? Yeah. Did you see it? It came out a couple weeks ago. My family went and they really enjoyed it. Fantastic. I want to check and see. Hopefully I'll check during the next break when that will be available, maybe on YouTube or somewhere for us to watch it, because there were some really valuable pieces of information for dating and how to date more practically. Check it out. The dating project. You can actually check out some of the videos online by the woman. I can't remember her name right now, but how she's presented ways to go on your first few dates and basically the evolution of the relationship and how to do it right, because we don't know how to date today.
Yeah, I think most of us forget that all this is intentional. You know, I mean, that idea of you're not going to have to kind of get to know someone over time. And that's why Facebook and all the online dating makes me a little nervous. I think, gosh, if we just started relating to people in real life more, understanding that connection is intentional and taking risks to go, hey, I see you here regularly. I know we've never met. You know, introduce yourself.
Absolutely. You know, one thing that I saw this week, and I've been teasing about this, saying that we're going to talk about it. So there was this open call. Austin Fletcher, he has some work on YouTube that he does, the Flecka Talks YouTube channel. And he went and did an open casting call and basically had actors come in and read off of a teleprompter. And just what they wanted is, we want your honest reaction to the facts that you read on the teleprompter. Oh my gosh, Chris, I watched it multiple times. I was laughing so hard because here are these actresses and a couple actors come in, and here are some of the facts that they're reading. Men work 14% more than women. Four of the five highest paid college specialists are basically by men. And they list the numbers like 87% of the people who are in the petroleum engineering industry are men. They are the ones choosing these careers. Yet the lowest paying college programs, such as counseling and psychology, are 74% dominated by women. And it's hilarious seeing the actors and actresses' responses as they're cringing, not wanting to read it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw one of the women had said something like, well, everybody knows that this is true, right? And it's funny how much of like these, like, everybody knows are not, it's not true. Like, you know, it's like, you know, everybody knows that women are paid less. Well, no, when you factor out education and you factor out hours worked, it's actually like dead even, right? You know, but everybody knows.
You know, here's the one. I think some of the reactions to this one. One of the women was reading as it said that men are actually, in fact, are two times more likely, for example, to be experience violence against them, be the victim of violence by unprovoked victims. Basically, they've not provoked it for these women to just be more violent toward them. Oh my gosh, women couldn't believe it. Yeah, because women will respond without being provoked as easily, right?
Wait. So say that again. Men are more likely to be the victim of female-on-male violence.
Yes.
I believe
but
that.
But unprovoked.
Sometimes I felt like it's been unprovoked. My wife and I will be talking, all of a sudden I just got hit, and I'm like, what happened? I don't even know. And you know,
you did something in her dreams.
Maybe it's not unprovoked. Maybe it's just that men, at times, we can be a bit oblivious.
And also, maybe women can hold on to grudges a little bit, not communicate what they're holding in.
The I'm angry at you, why? I had a dream last night. Yeah. I can't do
Is that a thing? Because I don't think I've ever been mad.
I don't think it's a thing. I think it's just one of those things
jokes.
We say. But there have definitely been times where, you know, you'd be kidding around and all of a sudden it's a playful, like, you know, a whack.
Boom.
Yeah. But guys don't get the playful, you know, the little playful, hey, punch in the arm, you know.
Hold on a second, though. Guys have this tendency out of love to mock and make fun of and crack jokes about women, and they mean it totally good-hearted, but man, you guys can just get under our skin sometimes.
And again, it goes back to male and female. We spar with each other.
Yeah.
Right? That's what we do. And so when we think we're teasing, you know, that, and that's a line that you have to learn, like, you can, and again, I can look at my wife and I'd be like, oh, this isn't funny anymore.
Oh, crap. You're like, right. I'm sparring. You are not sparring. You're going in for the kill.
And as a dad, you've got to be careful too, because you're flirting with your wife. You're kind of joking around, and all of a sudden your middle schoolers think it's funny to do the same thing.
Ooh.
And suddenly if mom feels like people have teamed up on her. And so you have to role model that and, it's one of those things you have to be careful of.
Here's an interesting fact, Chris. Yeah. Men are far more likely to be the victims of a violent abuse. Homicides, for example, they're 70% more likely to be the victims of homicide. 85% homelessness are men, and 76% of suicides are men. So men are at higher rates the victims of violent abuse. The women reading this in this fact-checking moment, reading this live, Chris, their reaction, well, this isn't reported by mass media. This isn't something I see. Are you sure about this?
Yeah, and I think there's a huge point to be made right there that we as consumers need to look past headlines. You know, and I do this all the time where I'll read something, a news story will come out and it'll link to a study and you go, oh, okay, well, let me read that study. And you go, oh, it doesn't really say that. Or it'll say, oh, well, this thing does X, Y, and Z. And you read it and you go, no, it didn't. You're attributing causal, you know, factors to that, that the study didn't say it, but it's much, much better headline when you accuse the, you know, have the causality there. So we have to turn our brains on. We just can't be consumers.
You know, and you even look at that generation where, you know, 22 to 30 year olds, women who are working without children earn 8% more than men who are of the same age range also working without children. Women who never have children and never marry versus men who never have children or marry either. Women earn 117% of what these men earn. And I look at it, Chris. And yet people are complaining about a wage gap and this gender, you know, ideology that women are just completely, there's this bias against women. That's not true. When women are actually working full time in the workforce without, I mean, I'm not referring to them as distractions, but quote unquote distractions here from work,
well,
right?
I'm going to say children should be a distraction.
Amen.
Because if, you know, children are a full time thing, and that's okay to say kids are a full time job. There's nothing negative about raising kids. You just don't get paid for it. Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're people, and your work itself is not a person. Your work is something to provide for a family. Even if you are a nurse, right, you are caring for people, right? You are caring for someone in finance. You're caring for helping care for the people's finances. But at the end of the day, you are doing a service to someone else. At home, you're caring for a person.
Right. So, you know, to say that, again, if you've got a man and a woman who both have no children, then the woman makes how much more on average?
No children, 117% more on average if they're not married and childless.
Wow. I mean, I that is a statistic.
Oh, sorry, 117% of what they made compared
right.
to men.
You don't hear that statistic, and it is a bit mind-blowing.
You know, I think it's really important for us to adequately present the truth of the wage gap. The reality is that the wage gap isn't there. women enter in and out of the workforce in a way that men don't. So you look at general numbers, men spend far more time in the workforce, often even earlier. Not only that, but women choose to work part-time more often. They also choose to take jobs such as nursing, such as child development, child care, such as psychology, studying theology. Gee, we don't know anyone who did that. That makes far less than other things that you could do.
Right. And so if you're choosing those fields, that's what's limiting you, not your gender.
You're listening to Trending. That's Chris Mueller. Follow us on social media. You can find Chris at C Mueller Tweets, or you can find me at Timmery. That's M-U-E-L-L-E-R, or Timmery at T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Would love to hear your thoughts. We will be right back in just a minute talking more about same-sex attraction.
You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
You're listening to Trending. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmery Millington. You know, one of the people that has really been in the news over the last year, especially the last 6 months, his YouTube channel, by the way, has almost quadrupled in the number of people following him, is Jordan Peterson. He's a clinical psychologist who has very clearly come out speaking about the issue of same-sex attraction, gender ideology, and from a clinical perspective, addressing this issue. This past week, I found a video where the question is posed to him, should couples who are living same-sex attracted lifestyles basically raise children?
Yeah, and you know, I loved his approach because what he really said, you know, the most stable unit that we have, or not the most stable unit, but the smallest unit of society that you can have that's still stable is the nuclear family, mm-hmm. right? And I love it because he really broke it down. Like, and if you break it down any further than that, it becomes unstable. That doesn't mean there are no good single family, but what you're doing is you're losing something integral. You're losing, you know, in a family, you've got mother and father, and just study after study after study shows that children do better when they have that example in the house.
And that then impacts your community, that impacts society, that impacts the other children in the neighborhood.
Right, and I think you argue that, you know, the nuclear family in the larger context of family and community is even better, but the smallest you can break down is there. You go stable, you go one lower than that, you lose that stability, and that's the way he approaches this conversation, to say, when you go to a same-sex household, you're losing something that is vitally important for the development of children, whether that be the feminine role model or the masculine role model. You have to, in some way, find a way to compensate for that.
He is not the only clinical psychologist saying this. Chris, what he's saying, and you're making it so clear, but we have to be willing to speak this in simple terms. Kids need an example of both models for each sex, a male and a female model. When your child doesn't have that, there really is this responsibility to provide that role model in some ways. Camille Paglia, man, hardcore, you know, pro-abortion, she's not totally, last I knew, in favor of same-sex marriage because she saw where that would lead to in the harm of society. But she is, you know, self-proclaimed lesbian. She does have a child, but she herself talks about the importance of having a model for the opposite sex for her child. So she's made an effort to make that happen. Camille Paglia, I just love listening to her. We may not agree, but there are points where you can tell she's reasoning through this. And this would be an area where, in fact, she does, because she's welcomed to talk to Jordan Peterson all the time. And basically, here's one of the pieces of information, Chris, that were so important. The development of the prefrontal cortex of the brain. This happens in a particular way when men interact with, in that rough and tumble play with their children.
Yeah, it's funny. I was listening to this video last night, and when that section came up, my wife was like, wait, what was that again? Because it was talking about how when rats play together and you know, they roughhouse, they learn rules of engagement, they learn these things, and that the dads use it as an incentive, right? Mm-hmm. That holding over this idea that, hey, we're going to play later if you can get that done, or if you behave properly, we're going to play later. It's an incentive that you can use with your kids, and that kids, that children who don't play that way, or in rodent studies, rats that are denied that, they're more likely to develop the rat version of attention deficit disorder.
Right, and then need to be treated with Ritalin, Adderall, you name it. But this is what's so neat, that joy of the possibility of play and the delay in gratification, that development, it develops the prefrontal cortex of the brain. And you guys, we have to remember when we're thinking about dissecting the brain here, where's the part of the brain that holds reason? It's in that prefrontal cortex where we work through the thinking brain is in that prefrontal cortex. And, you know, it's so cool because if you actually, I'll teach young kids and I'll teach parents how to talk to their kids about pornography. And I'll talk about how we've got a thinking brain and a free feeling brain, right?
Right.
And that thinking brain, it's really cool, almost comes up and over and in front of the feeling brain. The feeling brain's acting on animal-like instincts and impulses. But here's an example of helping your child to develop the fact that we may have desires, we may have strong, passionate emotions, but we can pause, we can wait, we can delay that joy. This is why fasting is so good for us.
You know, it just makes sense, too, because when you play, you roughhouse, you learn to restrain yourself, right? I tested this morning with my boys. We were sitting on the couch, and I had our two-year-old was sitting on a pillow like a little prince, like a little Eastern prince. He was sitting there, and I just poked him in the side, just a small little tickle, and he was like, and all of a sudden, and I did it one more time, and then all of a sudden, the six-year-old comes over, big grin, sits down, playtime is starting, and all of a sudden, we're wrestling there on the couch. And it just, I didn't have to say, hey guys, let's wrestle, let's do anything. They hunger for that interaction with their dad. They just do. And I forget that. It's so easy as a dad to get busy and the guy, I forgot to wrestle with my kids today. Right. But just, and so it was a great reminder. But again, you're looking at this idea of a same-sex situation, you know, they also need their mom's influence. That also plays a really important role. You know, you can't throw one away. And when you put in that position, you're saying, well, who's not important? Is it women or male? Is it women or men? You know, and that's where the real tragedy of it is. And it becomes less about what's best for the kid as much as my right to a child.
Mm.
And that's just backwards, right? Parenting is not about my right to my children. It's about the needs and the raising of these children.
You know, as you're talking about this rough and tumble play, I can't help but keep thinking, you know, this idea of gratification and delaying it and the importance of waiting and having that fun, but how important this play is for these kids. And in entering into that play, they not only learn, you know, how to play, how to delay gratification, but how to learn a balance of what's going too far, right? And
Absolutely.
When they could get hurt. And people are talking about, we talked at the beginning of the show with toxic masculinity. Well, let's backtrack. When you have rough and tumble play within proper context, proper boundaries, you now have taught your children what is the point of too far of just playing around, and that there's responsibility for it. You hurt someone, you can't hurt someone like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, my two-year-old had to go sit on the steps for a little bit. Because he took it too far, right? And
right.
You're teaching that, right? And you're teaching, no, you actually hurt someone now. You need to go sit down. What you're teaching when you say that is, when you act like this, you can't be part of the play, right? And we need to teach those lessons. Dads are important too.
And also not to be too sensitive, right?
Oh, yeah.
Not to be, you know, a baby, oh, they hurt me just because you want attention or you don't like being hurt. And this is what's interesting too. The reality is, right, men have more testosterone. They can endure more of the basic types of, you know, punches, bruises, broken arms than women can. This is why women don't initiate that rough and tumble play as much, because their body cannot maintain that sense of harm in some ways as men can.
Yeah, true. And does that mean that mom can't wrestle? No, mom can wrestle with the kids, obviously. But there's something about dad that makes them want to jump all over you. I don't know what it is, but it's true.
You know, there was something I was wanting to say and I forgot, but I just remembered it. This is one thing I'm seeing with a lot of young men today. They're not wanting to engage with their children rough and tumble play because, I'm sorry, you guys, but they're sensitive. They don't like, I've seen examples where little kids will run up and whack, you know, the guy, and the guy gets mad and gets angry, actually, and has an improper response. I remember growing up, I had a friend who would do this sometimes, and then he'd have to put himself into check and then go, okay, I can play with you, but, you know, don't make me mad. Well, I think we've gotten to a point where even fathers and men in general, whether it's playing with their little cousins, have become a little sensitive when the kids just want to play, and they need to be willing to come down and recognize the kid's actually not trying to hurt me. I maybe need to not be so sensitive. He's just trying to play and interact and bond with me.
Right. And if it hasn't been role modeled for you, or you've been role modeled the wrong type, it's difficult. You know, I remember when I finally replaced my tube television with a flat screen, we had it for, I think I got Christmas morning, and the next day she was three at the time, she threw a Christmas ornament. And it arced, little bell, and it dinged the screen, and
oh,
it cracked
yes.
it. And I like to say, like, and she went to timeout, and I went to timeout. Right? But there's a role modeling there to say, okay, dad needs to step away to collect himself for a moment. right? And then I went in and she was so upset. And I said, you need to know that I love you so much more than this. And I'm a little upset. I'm a lot upset because you were throwing things in the house that you shouldn't have been throwing. But I would throw this TV in the trash, you know, before I would ever want you to think that I don't love you.
And see, that's a great example, learning that Catholic virtue of being apologetic. And even when we make mistakes, but man, what is it with men and their TVs?
Oh, man. We still have it. It was funny because it's still broken. It still has a crack and a line through it. And we've had it for like, I don't know, 7 years that way. But yeah.
We had a tube TV for forever too. And I remember we were like in awe, dun dun, there's a flat screen TV. And now it's even mounted. And the idea of mounting a TV even is kind of another different idea as well. So this has been another great episode of Trending. I hope you think so, right? But we have other episodes that on your network might not be aired. So you can hop on to my website, timray.com, or you can look us up on Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Chris Mueller, C. Mueller Tweets. He has all of the links to the shows as well. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We are praying for you guys. Have an incredible week. We'd love to hear what you'd like to discuss throughout the week and any great news that you would like to hear covered. Maybe anything you're struggling with as well. You guys have a great week.
Yeah, shout it out. Be a part of the show and we will catch you guys on the other side. Thanks for being a part of Trending.
God bless.
This has been Trending with Kristen Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.